From the studios of KPCW in Park City, it's This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about the environment and our relationship with it. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak. Thanks for tuning in.
I'm here with special guest co-host Katie Wang. And joining us for the show today is Sarah Woodbury. She's the Communication and Outreach Director with the Wild Utah Project, and she's here to talk with us about ways that we can engage with environmental stewardship in 2021. Sarah, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, a pattern that I know that we've noticed at my organization is that interest in volunteering has just been off the charts this year. And I wanted to ask if you guys are experiencing this as well.
We are. We, along with I think everybody when COVID started, were a little bit nervous to see what volunteer turnout would be. But we were pleasantly surprised to see a lot more interest. A lot of our projects also can be done independently or from home, so I think that helped as well. But yeah, we've been seeing an increase in engagement, which has been great.
It's been really encouraging, I would say, to see that this year. One of the neat things about a couple of your volunteer opportunities are that you can do them during the winter. Not as many conservation opportunities, you know, can you get out in January and help with. So let's start by talking about a few of the things that our listeners could get started with, you know, today if they wanted.
Yeah. So we, first of all, have our Rosie Finch project that goes throughout the winter. It's our only winter-only project. So you may have heard on the show from Janice Gardner recently, but this focuses on a mysterious bird, the Rosie Finch, that loves the rugged landscapes that Utah and nearby states offer. And volunteers get involved by visiting bird feeders either in their local community or at a ski resort or even in their backyard to monitor for Rosie Finches throughout the season. And this is really important because there are big questions about these amazing birds since they do go to rugged alpine landscapes, understanding where they are and what their migration looks like. And other details about the species is necessary as we try to lay the necessary groundwork for their conservation. And so, especially as climate change threatens alpine areas that these birds depend on, this becomes really crucial work if we want to see these little pink birds thrive in our mountains into the future. So volunteers, to get involved in that one, just can head to our website, to our project page, and there they can learn more, sign up for the training, as well as to get involved. So that's one of our popular winter projects that's really, really amazing and important.
Before we jump on to the second project, give us a little bit more information about how people could identify a Rosie Finch and the areas where they're likely to see them.
Yeah, so Rosie Finches frequent higher alpine areas, hence are working with a lot of local ski resorts. Ski resorts like Alta are quite amazing in that they have already a culture of keeping bird feeders around and birders visiting these bird feeders on skis, which is pretty neat. So they do like the more rugged areas, talus slopes and cliffs and whatnot. So those ski resort feeders are important, but also important, we are monitoring backyard feeders and feeders in the community just to learn more, since there are a lot of gaps in understanding about these birds. And they are a unique bird as well in that they have pink on their wings, which in the wild, flamingos and just a couple other birds have really quite a vibrant pink, but yeah, they're a unique little bird. And so in our training, you learn how to identify these finches. There are black Rosie Finches as well as a couple of others. So yeah, we have all that information on our website. And in the training, you'll become an expert birder if you're not already. So yeah.
And can people of all ages participate in this? I mean, I have some young children who are you know, 8 and 13, so not super young, but, you know, are very interested in birds. Is this something that you can kind of take the training, learn how to identify, and then, you know, as you're skiing, you mark it down? And, I mean, how complicated, how much of a scientist does one need to be a citizen scientist?
So this is open to anyone with an interest in birds and the ability to learn how to identify birds, basically. So yes, people of all ages are completely welcome. I would think this would be a really fun family activity as well. I know I'm in an apartment, but if I had a yard, I'd love to have a bird feeder out and you go out and check it every so often during the summer. And again, the training is available to everyone, so you don't have to be a scientist at all. Just anyone who loves birds or would like to learn about them is completely welcome to join.
Fantastic. Well, that sounds like a fun one. If people aren't maybe able to get out, you know, onto their skis or into the alpine environments or outside much, you also have an opportunity that can be done virtually from home this winter, right?
Yes. So we have one of our longstanding and quite popular projects is the Wasatch Wildlife Watch. So during the warmer months, volunteers set up camera traps along the Wasatch Mountains, which take photos when they sense movement. So we end up on the back end with lots of really cool behind-the-scenes images of all kinds of different wildlife, from coyotes to skunks to just whatever you can imagine. So volunteers from home sort through these images, labeling which species are present in the images. So this is a COVID-safe way to volunteer, and it's a really amazing opportunity to see the secret lives of wildlife in our home state. And the data gathered from this is really important. It will be used to create predictive habitat models that will result in heat maps for wildlife habitat use across the Wasatch. So these are important because they can inform development decisions in the future. Things like where to put a wildlife bridge or where key migration routes are that wouldn't be great spots for roads to go, different things like that. So it has a lot of use for conservation in the West. And yeah, it's a neat one to be involved in from home.
I imagine this is a fairly popular opportunity because I know here up in Summit County, people are just obsessed with our wildlife bridge, just tracking how successful it's been. And you know, you can see these wildlife bridges all over the country and how kind of intricate they are. And ours seems kind of fairly straightforward. And like, I don't know, is a bridge going to work? And people are just, you know, posting on Facebook, like, did you see this and that? And so, you know, hopefully you are seeing some good activity there because it's pretty interesting.
Yes. Yeah. It's been really interesting. Yeah. To see wildlife just immediately start using this bridge and all the amazing images out there and videos. These are successful structures, and we do hope to see more of those in the future and to be able to provide the answers to questions for where these kind of things should go and give the groundwork necessary before these things can happen.
So give us a sense of some of the things that people might see as they're working through the photos taken by the camera traps.
So the camera traps, which whenever they sense movement, they will take photos. So there will be some photos that might not have wildlife in them, which are just as important to be labeled as far as answering questions about wildlife goes. But yeah, they might see all kinds of different wildlife. We've had bears, coyotes, badgers, foxes. One of my favorite images, which I guess is a little bit gruesome but kind of interesting from this season, was a coyote carrying a deer head. So all kinds of interesting stuff going on behind the scenes there that you don't normally get to see.
Just like our dogs with the random leg bone of some deceased animal. Are you seeing a difference in the patterns? I was just skiing the other day and noticed a couple moose heading up to the canyons, which I'm sure is not their normal track pattern. But just given how dry it's been this year, are you noticing a difference in the camera traps of which animals are coming through and where they're not, maybe?
That is a great question. Because the image analysis happens after the season, it would be too early to make any conclusions on wildlife movement. But that kind of information and heat maps will be developed as we get back this data and start to turn it into these models.
So one last question on this program before we move on. What kind of interface do people have when they're going through these photos? Do you need to have any specific kind of, you know, computer system? Tell us a little bit about how that works.
So no specific computer system is needed. Basically, they will be connected with our partner at the U, Austin Green, who's a PhD candidate. And he puts together these photos in neat little packages that he sends over to folks, and they just go through and label the images. So it's fairly low tech and simple. So again, this is welcome. We have kids and families as well working on this with their parents just to get a glimpse into the behind the scenes of wildlife. So yeah, it's quite simple to get involved. And you can kind of monitor your own pace and, yeah, very, very friendly project.
Fantastic. Sounds approachable. As we look forward to the spring and summer, of course, that's going to be a really active time for land restoration and monitoring projects. So tell us a little bit about some of the opportunities to get involved outside this spring.
Yeah, we have a lot of different projects, most of them starting their trainings in April. So one project that is that gets a lot of volunteers on it is the Stream and Riparian Restoration Project. So that project allows volunteers who might just have one day to volunteer get involved, where some of the other projects might require a few different site visits throughout the season, etc. So with the Stream Project, we have different sites across the state. We have some that we've returned to in Park City that are amazing, as well as down in Price and just different areas. But this is one that folks can also do socially distanced outdoors. And what we're doing on those streams is important restoration work. So we do plantings of native plants, as well as build beaver dam analogs, which are structures that are really simple but have research behind them that shows that they are really effective in conserving streams and restoring them to a more natural state. We have a lot of degraded streams throughout the West, and we've seen the disappearance of different species of wildlife like beavers because of that from different stream reaches. So improving the streams to the point that beavers hopefully can come back in and start doing their work and continue restoring the landscape. So volunteers come in and get their hands dirty for a day-long project, and it's a really fun project as well. And we've been really excited in this last season that we've already seen beavers returning to two stream reaches, which is amazing. Especially considering how degraded some of these streams are. So yeah, that's one really exciting project that we'll have starting in the spring.
Well, I'm going to jump in and give a plug for that one, Sarah, because one of the partnerships, of course, with Wild Utah Project is with Swanner Preserve, and which of course is my real job, right, outside of the radio show at KBCW. And we applied for a grant together to build 100 beaver dam analogs in our watershed this coming year. And so there's going to be major activity on the Swanner Preserve and with some of our partners throughout the county to work on installing these. And so, as you said, it's a nice way to get outside. You can be socially distanced and, you know, get your hands wet and potentially your legs wet as well, depending on the work you're doing. So they're always a lot of fun to build, and we'll have information out about that this spring.
Yes. And then one of our other projects that we'll be starting in the spring is our amphibians project. So this one I really personally just enjoy. It focuses on the boreal toad, which is a species that has seen massive declines in recent years with various reasons. One major one being chytrid fungus, which is a really serious disease plaguing amphibians right now. But volunteers basically head to the mountains and to different sites across Utah with toad buckets in tow. So these toad buckets have some data sheets to record information about the site, things that they're observing, what the weather's like, etc. And then they search for toads and signs of toads, of boreal toads specifically. And not every site will have boreal toads, but we are monitoring just to see where they might be able to be reintroduced, where they might be that we didn't realize before. It's a really fun project as well. We have, if COVID things pending, we also offer the option to go out with scientists on a field trip as well to kind of learn what you're looking for, et cetera. But we do also have online trainings that teach you everything you need to know about how to identify these toads, what different stages look like. Just everything you need to know. And so if you like hiking, this is a great project for you. It's a really fun project.
So I know that you would learn all of this in the training, but what are some of the signs that you might see a boreal toad or that boreal toads are in the area?
Yeah, that's a great question. So boreal toads are a little bit unique in that they are a higher elevation species of toad. So there are some similar amphibians that might be mistaken for boreal toads that exist at lower elevations, but these toads like it up higher in the mountains. So wet meadows is of course a sign they need water. And just that higher elevation. And then, of course, in the training, you learn what to look for on the toad. They have this particular dorsal stripe. They're really fascinating little toads. I went out this summer and was able to see them in all different life stages, and they do a really, really cute little squeak, to be honest. They're just very cool little toads.
The charismatic reptile.
Right. Yes, they are. It's a lot, but
well, Sarah,
yeah, that's a really neat one.
We have a few minutes left if you want to highlight any other opportunities for this spring and summer.
Yeah, so we have a couple other projects as well coming up this spring. So our Wasatch Wildlife Watch, which I kind of touched on earlier, that the portion that is out in the fields will be starting this spring as well. So for this one, folks go to different areas throughout the Wasatch and set up camera traps and monitor these camera traps throughout the season. So this one is more involved. You're really taking on a site and stewarding different cameras. And it can be pretty remote and difficult to access locations or easier locations. It kind of depends on your interest. This is a really neat project, again, for those who like to get out into the mountains or just on a local trail. A lot of different options for getting involved there. Our other project that we'll have coming up in the spring is our Utah Pollinator Pursuit. And so this one also has a couple of different options for getting involved. So volunteers can either become a site steward or they can opportunistically record observations. So we've seen monarch and western bumblebee populations in the West really declining recently, with some pretty depressing figures right now for their population numbers. But what folks do is they either choose a site to monitor throughout the season, visiting a few times and checking for signs of monarchs, looking for things like eggs or just signs of eating milkweed, different things like that. And that's the more involved way to get involved in that project. Or folks can just download a simple app where when they're out in their gardens or on a walk or hiking or wherever they may be, if they see a bumblebee or a monarch, they just record these observations as they see them. So it's a really simple way to get involved, but really important as we look at where migration is happening, where these populations are, and what needs to happen in conservation to make sure that we still have these species in our future. So that one really harnesses, all of our projects harness the power of community science, using passionate individuals who learn and care about their local environment and answer questions in ways that we just couldn't do with a smaller group of people. So it's another really amazing project.
Fantastic. Well, we have to start to wrap up here, but I want to ask if people are interested in participating in these, where can they learn more and what does the registration process look like?
Yes, so all of the information is on our website. We have a different page for each project. So if you're interested in one particular project, you can just go to that page and sign up to receive our emails and communications about the project, where we'll tell you how to get involved, what the training looks like, just all everything you need to know. Or if you're just more interested in staying up to date on what's happening with the projects or in the projects in general, not yet sure which one you'd like to be involved in, we do also just have an option to sign up to hear about updates and our current projects as well. So yeah, all that information is on our website. Folks are also absolutely welcome to email me at sarah@wildutahproject.org. I'm always talking with folks and helping them find projects that fit what they need, and I'm happy to do that as well. So yeah, we're so grateful for volunteers. We would not be able to do what we do without them. They make so much important work happen in the West. So yeah.
Well, thanks. Sarah mm-hmm. Woodbury is the communications director with the Wild Utah Project. Thank you so much for joining us this morning and sharing all those opportunities to get engaged and get outside this year.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of This Green Earth.
And if you did, we hope you'll take a minute to rate us, share us, and leave a comment.
You can email us your thoughts and ideas for future shows at thisgreenearth@kpcw.org.
Join us next week on This Green Earth.